I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We will honor the fallen tonight. Sadly, we have more of those. We will talk about the military and service. We'll give you an update on the Trump trial from today, the latest on the border. All that's coming up on I'm Right. All right, before we get into many things, military matters and the Trump stuff and everything else, we need to do something we hate doing off the top of the show, but it's something we feel obligated, always have, always will. Honoring the fallen, specifically those who die in training, just non-combat operations. We had a Super Stallion go down as a helicopter, a Marine helicopter, and five Marines on board from the Heavy Helicopter Squadron 361 are now confirmed dead. I don't have anything else I'm going to say or need to say about it. It is so sad. Say a prayer for those families. They're obviously getting the worst news you could ever have in your life. I again want to emphasize that these deaths in combat and deaths that are not in combat, they are not in vain. People think that things like this happen and they say, oh, it's such a waste. No. No, it's not. This is how militaries learn. This is how they improve. This is how lives get saved in the future. Their sacrifice is awful and it's sad. But lessons are learned through failure, mechanical failure. Whatever the case may be, planning, whatever the case may be, that's how lessons are learned. It happens. It happens and it's awful. But either way, honor the fallen. We've lost three reservists recently in Jordan. We lost two Navy SEALs. It's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot. So we will continue to pray for the families and we will continue to move on. Now, let's move on to something that we've talked about a million times on the show, but it's something we need to talk about. The mental capacity of the president of the United States of America. Have you ever known somebody who is going through, and I hope you haven't, but sadly so many of us do, that is going through Alzheimer's or dementia? Have you ever known someone in your life? You probably have. It's awful. It's awful. There's nothing to celebrate about it. But there is something people who have gone through this will know. Oftentimes, the person who's struggling with this will begin to recall things from way earlier in their life as if they happened yesterday. And it actually gets worse as they get worse, as the condition gets worse. You'll have, I'm not going to name names, it's not my, somebody I knew, older, as she got worse and worse and worse, when you got with her, she would tell you, when you sat down with her, she would tell you about something that happened from her teenage years, learning how to drive. And yesterday I was driving with my dad. It happens. So yes, obviously it's easy to poke fun at Joe Biden, but it's wild to watch the president, the sitting president of the United States of America, do this on camera. Here's Joe Biden recalling meeting with the French president after he got elected president, except the guy he recalled meeting died almost 30 years ago.
People have pled guilty. You know, right after I was elected, I went to what they call a G7 meeting, all the NATO leaders. It was in the south of England. And I sat down and I said, America's back. And Mitterrand from France looked at me and said, you know, How long are you back for?
Recalling a conversation he just recently had with the man who's been dead for 28 years. Don't think that's some kind of a one-off. We now have reports that at not one but two fundraisers, he recalled the exact same story. The president of the United States of America is not well. And for all the disagreements I have and as much dislike as I have for Joe Biden, he needs care. He needs rest and care. People who go through this, they can't be put in stressful situations, travel all over the place, answer questions here, give speeches there. That is the polar opposite of what someone going through this needs. People who go through this need a relaxed environment to get by. They'll choose the paint colors in these care facilities for these people specifically to try to keep things calm and relaxed. The president can't do this. Oh, and I should note, he also recalled meeting with the German chancellor who had died years earlier. This is a big problem because he's the commander in chief and the war drums are beating as we speak. And speaking of those war drums, I had somebody talk to me recently and they asked me, they said, Jesse, do you regret serving in the Marines knowing what we know now about Iraq and all the other stuff? Knowing what we know now, do you regret serving in the Marines? And I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you, I do not. I joined the Marines because, well, for a few different reasons. One, I needed to grow up. I was a very immature young man. Not anymore, but I was a very immature young man. I needed to grow up. I wanted to serve my country. I wanted a sense of purpose. I wanted to test myself. And my time in the Marines, including Iraq, helped me do all of those things. Just because evil men who run the country and our military lie about everything at all times doesn't mean I look back and regret it. I do not. Now, that said, there are degrees of evil. Will I allow my sons to serve if it's my decision? Remember, when they turn 18, they do what they want and nothing I can do about it. But if I have a say-so, will I allow my sons to serve? And look, everyone has a different answer. My answer is no, I will not. I will not allow my sons to serve in a military that is turning despicable and gross and hostile to them. I will not allow my sons to serve underneath this.
Why is diversity important to the Air Force?
Diversity is important to the Air Force because the world is diverse.
Because without it, we're limited.
It's what makes the Air Force stronger.
When we collaborate with people from different backgrounds, we always come up with multiple solutions.
We need all diversity of thought, and we need to honor the values and opinions of everyone in the United States Air Force.
I think it's important for us to see possibility in our senior leadership, and diversity brings that to the table as well.
No, my sons will not serve under that. Everyone knows what DEI actually is. It's communism, for one. It's anti-white racism, anti-white male. I will not allow my sons to serve underneath that. I simply won't. Why would I put my sons in that? They can serve in other ways. And let's talk about the basic competence problem. If I allow my sons to go in, their lives may very well rely upon somebody who only achieved their position because they were gay or a woman or black or whatever the case may be. So I'm going to potentially lose my sons for diversity's sake? Nah. I'm going to go ahead and pass on that. Have you seen the latest about diversity? I hope you're ready to fly the friendly skies this year. Take a listen to this little training video from the FAA.
We're also looking at really a need across the agency to recruit and retain a diverse population of folks.
Your whole program is very heavily male-dominated. It just is. And really, it is white male dominated. Let's just say what it is. And so let's be willing that is today what it is. And then let's talk about what could the future look like if we really had this program that was representative of the whole country, right, of the whole world.
No, Angela, that's great. Honestly, those are some words that we really need to spend some time, I think, kind of digging through and thinking about.
Yeah, I want to make sure Matt Walsh gets credit for breaking that story of the Daily Wire, but Look, we all woke up today to the news that two planes just collided in Boston, two JetBlue planes. By the grace of God, nobody was hurt this time. We have the story about the United plane that landed so hard, allegedly by a diversity hire pilot, that the plane is probably totaled. Collisions, near collisions, planes, that all-woman flight crew in the military skidding off the runway. Communism kills, DEI kills people, and this stuff is bad. It's really bad, and it's infected every part of this society like cancer. Did you hear this from Eric Adams in New York?
Have you ever seen this much chocolate leading the city of New York? And then go down the line. Look who's here. This is representative of the city. That's why people are hating on me. You trying to figure out why they're hating on me? They're hating on me because those are, how many of you go to church? Ma'am, this is a Matthew 21 and 12 moment. Jesus walked in the temple. He saw them doing wrong in the temple. He did what?
He turned the table over. Came over.
I went to City Hall to turn the table over. First woman police commissioner of color. First Spanish-speaking police commissioner. First Spanish-speaking correction commissioner. Go through the line of what we're doing.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I wonder why New York City's going downhill. Have you ever seen this much chocolate? Disgusting. Disgusting what's happening in this country. Anyway, we'll talk to Jason Nelson about military matters and many other things. We have a huge show for you tonight. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, I bet those timeshare checks you're writing make you uncomfortable. I bet every time you have to pay those annual fees for a timeshare you don't use anymore, I bet it's really uncomfortable, isn't it? I bet you're sitting there steaming as your hand writes that check. Is your hand shaking because you're so mad? Call Lone Star Transfer and stop writing that check. You're not stuck in your timeshare. You're not. You think you are because they lie. They tell you you signed the contract, it's in the fine print. Lone Star Transfer has heard all these stories before, and they've been defeating these scamming timeshare companies and getting people legally and permanently out of their timeshare. Over 18,000 timeshare owners are now free. You want to join the ranks of the free? Call them. 844-310-2646. Let Lone Star Transfer set you free. All right? We'll be back.
The allegations are baseless, and I'm focused on the work, which was what brings me to Las Vegas today.
Republicans have indicated they may hold another vote, and they might have the numbers at that point to impeach you. If that happened, would you consider stepping aside?
No, I would not.
Okay. Who is this guy? What's his background? Very curious about that. Joining me now, Jason Nelson, Army, and more importantly, Marine veteran. Jason Mayorkas has been all over the news recently. The GOP, of course, screwed up impeaching him, but who is this guy and what has he been doing at the DHS?
You know, the primary responsibility of being the Secretary of Homeland Security is obviously to including immigration enforcement, port of entry, other things like that. Basically, he's in charge of our entire country's protection against enemies that might come through here and through immigration. And the fact of the matter is that he's failed. Not only has he failed in enforcing existing laws, but they've made it so that almost anyone can come into this country, thus inviting people to be sent here from nations all over the globe. And what we're seeing is essentially an invasion at this point.
We are seeing an invasion. What do they get out of this? I get this question all the time from people. Why would these people want to burn down the country where they have to live too?
Without getting into conspiracies, I think, quite frankly, disorder, anytime that the government can create a problem, they therefore can create a solution, a need in which there's more government jobs. Anytime they can move people from the production class over to the government administrative state, they get more control over the rest of people's lives. And people crave more than money, more than anything, they crave power. And I essentially think this is just a power grab. And then you could look at votes, you could look at other things like that. But again, it's really just all about power.
Mitch McConnell was behind this border bill. Even Democrat Chris Murphy is saying that he was knee-deep involved in this border bill. So the most powerful Republican in Washington, D.C., helped create an amnesty bill with the communists. How infected is the GOP?
Well, in McConnell's particular case, what we're talking about is his loyalty to the Ukrainian war, the Ukrainian war machine. We know who funds McConnell. We know that big military has constantly been funding his campaigns, have been funding a lot of the GOP, and that's been what's been holding them together over the last 20 years. And right now, he wants to continue to dump money, so much money in comparison to the border. I think it's 60 times as much money when it comes down to it, just to tie to this bill alone. So the fact that he would tie any border security in the United States to border security in Ukraine says immediately that, one, he doesn't uphold Republican or conservative values. And number two, he's telling the American people and holding them hostage. And he knows that the American people no longer want to support the Ukrainian war effort, at least not to any extent that we're seeing right now. And because of this, I know that he set this up for failure so that he could then blame MAGA Republicans. So I think what he gets out of it is, again, more power. And having crafted this, he's told everyone he doesn't care about conservative values one bit, much less this country's security.
Of course. Jason, I was surprised to see Al Sharpton, of all people, go on the news and call this an invasion. Here he was.
But the border, I mean, we're looking every day at the invasion of migrants, and they're playing a time game with politics on this.
An invasion? That's King Democrat Al Sharpton. What's happening over there?
You know, this is a big case of NIMBY biting someone in the rear. You know, nobody wants something in their backyard. It's great just to call your city a sanctuary city as long as it gets you certain federal funding and lots of attention in the press. But when it really comes down to it and it starts to impact the communities that you represent, they have no choice but to change their tune. Al Sharpton has long represented a very extreme wing of the Democrat Party, but in particular, a socioeconomic group that right now is being mostly harmed by this migrant and illegal migration. So for him to use the word invasion, I think he's just echoing the sentiment of his community. And that's what it is. It is an invasion at this point. We're seeing an overwhelming majority of military-aged males who are coming across unaccompanied. They're coming from countries across the world, including China, in massive amounts of numbers. And at this point, again, you have to question who's paying for them to come here, who's organizing this. It's beyond the encouragement and the failure to enforce laws, but at this point, it seems almost as though people are being shipped in here. And quite frankly, it's insanity. If I were to look at this from the perspective of civil affairs specialist, and I would sit here and do an area study or a country study, I would say that the United States border situation is deteriorating so bad that we are beginning to look at like a failed state.
Golly. All right, let's switch gears only a little because it's actually along the same lines. Taiwan just had elections. They did not go China's way. And while I'm happy about that, at the same time, that may mean we've got a rocky future. Are we going to have a conflict with China? Are we ready for a conflict with China?
whether or not we have a conflict with China depends on whether or not we actively engage when they do move on Taiwan. There is no question they will move on Taiwan. They've declared that they will move on Taiwan if Taiwan doesn't self-assimilate. So therefore, we know it's coming. If we act and if we were to engage with Chinese forces and try in any sort of combat whatsoever, I think we are completely ill-prepared. Jesse, I don't know when you got out, but I retired 2 years ago, and I can tell you that at this point, the average soldier spends more time in classes about isms and ists and gender identity than they do but actively using their primary weapon system. So they spend more time training how to be appropriate and how to be the rainbow feely world than they do actually how to use their rifle. And when you consider that and you think about what the Chinese troops are doing and what they are training to do, and you watch their training and you go, once you get past our first wave, you get past your Mews that are spun up and have already done their SOC training and are on rotation, who do you pull back in? You know, you tie in a group that's rotating in for training, that's not pulled together, that doesn't have the assets that they need. Again, they're going to get eaten through because that's what happens in a war. And we are not positioned right now to have enough frontline troops outside of our special operators that can go in and do the kind of warfare that would be needed against an enemy like China. Therefore, I doubt we would get involved. But again, if we do, I hesitate to see what happens the minute we have to start sending in second line forces who've had zero time to prepare and no ability to even work with their weapon systems.
Yeah, Lee. Jason, that was friggin' awesome, man. Come back again soon. Thank you so much. Yeah. That's pretty sobering, but that's what I hear consistently. All right. Hey, speaking of China, you think China maybe studies finance trends, global trends, economic trends? They do. They're a major nation state. They do. You know what China's doing right now? Buying gold. Did you know that? Tons of it. They're hoarding it almost at a creepy level. Why do you think that is? Because they understand exactly how shaky things are, and they understand no matter what happens, no matter what happens, war, global depression, famine, no matter what, the gold, the value remains. Gold has stood the test of time. 1,000 years from now, the gold you buy from Oxford Gold Group will have incredible value. Isn't that amazing? There's nothing else you could say that about ever. Oh, my Apple stock! It won't be here 1,000 years from now. The gold coins will. Call Oxford and let them send you some. They'll send it to your front door. It's easy. It's for normal people. You don't need a bank vault for it. They'll get it in your retirement account. But get some. 833-995-GOLD. Call them. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know what's wild about illegal immigration? All this focus on drugs and things like that, and all that stuff is very, very valid. I'm not saying that's not valid, but what a lot of people don't talk about is how much American children suffer because of all the illegal alien children who come into this country and, of course, get a free education here. As I sit right here, I'm in the burbs of Houston. As I sit right here, I am 10 minutes away from a school, not in a big city, not even in Houston, one of the burbs out in Texas, a school that has an entire wing dedicated to people who only speak Spanish. Not a wealthy town. An entire wing for the illegals they've piled into this place. It's wild that nobody talks about this. Joining me now, the Professor Nicholas Giordano, High Education Fellow at Campus Reform, Higher Education Fellow, I'm sorry. Professor, you have an op-ed up about this very thing, all the illegals in our education system. Talk about it.
Absolutely. There's both short-term and long-term consequences to the crisis we're now facing, a crisis that's actually self-induced. It's of our own making. And when we look at the numbers, so since 2021, over 400,000 unaccompanied minors have crossed into the United States, many more in family units, and they have enrolled in the public education system. So in my area in New York City, they've had 30,000 illegal immigrants enroll in just 1 year. Now, that many students in 1 year is certainly going to lower the quality of education students receive, and the system's already failing. It's already not providing an education, but that's only going to get worse. And it costs New York City taxpayers $38,000 per year per student to educate. But the consequences are much deeper than that, because nobody's looking at the long-term consequences of people from other countries coming into the United States, going through a school system. And while they're going through that school system, they're taught that the country they came to is a racist country built on white supremacy, that America and the founding fathers were evil and the whole intent behind the United States was evil. So when you are indoctrinating foreign students that come here and go through this education system with the idea that they should hate the country that they came to, how are they ever going to develop a respect and a loyalty to the United States? On top of that, we're not teaching American students and legal permanent residents the good things about the United States. They're getting the same anti-American indoctrination that everyone else is receiving. And they don't understand American principles like liberty and freedom. And how can you defend what you don't know? So what you're seeing is the future of a very tribal society where there's a bunch of people that are bitter and resentful because they've been taught that they are either part of the oppressor class or the oppressed class. They're a victim or a victimizer. And that's not going to bode well for us going forward.
No, it's certainly not going to bode well for us going forward. Not only that, the 8 million we've already brought here are going to have children here. Many of them will, and they'll be educated as American citizens in that exact same education system, won't they?
They will. And unfortunately, what the left has done, they've done away with the assimilation process here in the United States. At Campus Reform, we've been reporting on the speech codes that exist. One of the topics within the speech codes on college campuses is melting pot. So you see, the higher education system has done away with this idea as the melting pot. It's a racist concept now. It's a microaggression. And that has now watered down and filtered down to the K-12 system. And understand, the idea of getting rid of the melting pot as a topic of discussion and educating, well, it's really changed the mindset of people that are coming to this country. See, it used to be that when people immigrated to the United States, whether it was legally or illegally, they would have to assimilate to American culture. They would have to adopt American values, American principles. But they've been told now that it's America that must bow to their cultures. It's America that must bow to their traditions and their philosophies. And again, so how are we going to coexist as a society if we keep on focusing on the things that are dividing us? I mean, the whole reason that we see so much division in our society today is twofold. It's because no one knows really about the American system and the intent behind it. But the second reason is because our education system has failed to educate students on what actually unifies us through these founding principles.
Yeah. Well, how could they get an education from something called woke kindergarten? $250,000 in San Francisco for woke kindergarten. And I'll tell you what, Professor, I'm surprised test scores dropped after all that. How could that be?
I know, it's shocking, right? When you're not focusing on teaching students how to read and write, do math, what is their civic obligation in the American system, and instead you're focusing on this idea of white supremacy and how everyone hates minorities and that minorities don't stand a chance, it's not really all that shocking to see the test scores continue to drop throughout the United States, particularly in the Oakland school district that we're talking about. I mean, it really is a failure of the system. And the person that owns this company is an avid anti-Americanist that openly admits that. It's not like she tries to hide it or cover it up. She promotes anti-Americanism. This is what's being filtered to the student body. And again, there's no standards in our education system anymore. We could pretend as much as we want, but the numbers are the numbers, and proficiency levels are at 30-year lows. Our university systems continue to fall in the worldwide rankings. You have high schools in Oregon that have done away with reading, writing, and math as proficiency standards to get a high school diploma. I mean, it's embarrassing. In New York State, they redefined what basic proficiency means. Since we perform twice below the national average, they just redefine the word. It's not like they try to attempt to fix the problem, get students caught up. Instead, they say, well, this represents the new normal, and we don't have faith in the new student body that they could accomplish, that they could achieve, that they could work hard. It's the attacks on merit and standards that we've been witnessing for the last several years, that if you do the right thing in the United States, you're going to be punished, right? We've done away with honors systems in a lot of these public school districts, the honors programs, the gifted programs, all because they say it hurts people of color. And when you look at where the racism lies in the left's own arguments, because what they're saying is that people of color are not as capable as their white counterparts, so they got to dumb everything down. The truth is, my students in my classroom, I have a lot of minorities, about 40%. All minorities in my classroom, they are equally as capable as their white counterparts. I don't need to drop standards. I don't need to understand that some people hand in things late because of their culture or anything like that. I have one standard for all my students, and they're all capable of meeting those standards.
Professor, I saw this little video of a lady who's bragging about her 8-year-olds and teaching them about pronouns. Here she is.
One of the kids referred to me as a girl, and one of my kids was like, Jamie doesn't have a gender. Jamie's not a girl. Oh my God. And like, the kid was just like, what do you mean? And she was just like, Jamie doesn't have a gender. Jamie is not a girl.
I like the way that like, the way that has me is so emotional. She's 8. My 52-year-old parents still f***ing call me she after being out for 3 years. And I, like, just told the, like, really, like, started correcting the kids back in, like, September. Like, that was, like, so awesome. That was just, like, so awesome.
Professor, setting aside the fact we have teachers who can't speak without using the word like 18,000 times in a sentence, how many people in your profession are just flat-out predators who go into the profession to prey on these kids? Because it's very clearly some of them.
Well, it clearly is, and I think that the damage that is being inflicted on the youth is something that's going to be generational. I mean, this is going to last decades. This is going to be end in disaster. The reality that you're teaching children that there's no real concept of gender that exists, you're promoting this, you're proud of this. You have books in school libraries that promote pornography. In some cases, kids giving each other oral sex in the fourth grade, which is about 10 and 11-year-olds. It really is shameful what's being done within our profession. And it's shameful that you have the entire education system and the entire medical establishment that wants to promote this on children. Children don't sit there and look at everything as the be-all, end-all when it comes to gender and race, color of one's skin, ethnicity, or anything like that. Yet that's exactly what they're pushing on these children. And when we look at it, I mean, just look at how they say that, you know, women equality and everything like that, but now everything's being dominated by men, right? Men entering women's sports, men going into women beauty contests are all winning. It's a complete disaster all around, and there's no scholarship actually behind it. That's the annoying and frustrating part from my end. There's no scholarship. The only scholarship that exists is what we're seeing coming out of Europe, where they're actually pulling out all this trans nonsense because they understand how damaging it's been to the children, particularly those that are prepubescent.
Professor, thank you so much. Come back soon. That was friggin' outstanding. All right. Supreme Court had oral arguments today. Can Trump's name remain on the ballot? How'd these arguments go? What are you supposed to make of any of this stuff? I don't know. I bet Bill Jacobson does, though. He's going to join us next and break all this stuff down. Before he does, let's take care of your liver real quick. Your liver is not exactly something that's top of mind, right? Who thinks about their liver at all? But our livers, they're everything. They're the filtration system for our body. All the gunk we put in, whether it's alcohol, just preservatives, toxins, all the things that you put in your body, they get filtered through your liver. So what have you done to help it? You know that I have a history of a fatty liver. It's just kind of a hereditary thing. I have to be more proactive to take care of mine. We all should. That's what Liver Health Formula is about. All natural, drug-free. Clean up your liver. Make sure your liver is healthy and remains healthy. All right? And right now, they're giving away a free bottle of omega-3s with it so you can take care of your liver and your heart in one shot. Go to getliverhelp.com/Jesse. Getliverhelp.com/Jesse. I have to take it. Everyone should take it. Go now. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
No, there has to be some process for determining those questions. And then the question becomes, does anything in the 14th Amendment say that only Congress can create that process? And Section 5 very clearly is not an exclusive provision. It says Congress shall have power.
But maybe put most boldly, I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States. In other words, you know, this question of whether a former president is disqualified for insurrection to be president.
Elena Kagan? Didn't see that one coming. Let's ask the professor, the lawyer, Bill Jacobson. He's the one who knows all this stuff. Okay, Bill, you're the founder of Legal Insurrection and you teach at Cornell. So I'm assuming this will make a lot more sense to you than it makes to me. How in the world is Elena Kagan sounding like Clarence Thomas out there? What happened today?
Well, this may be one of those rare occasions when we have either 8 or 9 judges coming together and saying what happened here for a variety of reasons is not right. It's not constitutional. And so I think that this is such an outrageous move that Colorado did that we're going to probably get an 8-1 or maybe 9-0 Supreme Court ruling that this was improper. You just played a clip from Elena Kagan. Ketanji Brown Jackson also had negative comments about this. People on the left are somewhat apoplectic over it because they're looking at possibly a clean sweep here, might be on different grounds. But this was such an outrageous move that Colorado pulled that I think the Supreme Court, by all accounts, is going to slap it down very hard.
Okay, Bill, tell me, does that mean there won't be any other of these challenges from states, meaning the Supreme Court slaps Colorado down? No one else is even going to try this, or if they do, it won't get anywhere, right?
I think that's right, because it might depend in part on the grounds. You know, the main ground that seemed to bother the justices was that, why is this happening now? The Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says you cannot hold office if you're an insurrectionist. Doesn't say you can't run for office. So why are we doing this now? And that was a lot of the discussion. So I think that the Supreme Court may very well hold 9-0 that this is not the time for anybody to be even thinking about this. That if he may not even be elected, why should we rule that somebody can't run for office when the 14th Amendment simply says they can't hold office? And the 14th Amendment also allows for Congress to remove the disability of insurrection from somebody. So Trump could win and Congress could determine that he did not commit an insurrection and he can become president. So I think on multiple grounds, you're going to get this knocked down. They may not be multiple unanimous grounds, but I think it's very likely to be unanimous that he stays on the ballot in Colorado.
Professor, I know we lose sight of something. I certainly do. These Supreme Court justices, politicians, they become just characters on TV, almost like they're actors or something. But they are flesh and blood people. And it's very clear that the left is going to try to intimidate the conservative justices, the right-leaning justices, however we want to put that. They're protesting in front of their homes. One already tried to kill Brett Kavanaugh. It's become a thing that politicians now talk about, from Biden to Schumer. They talk about how these people have to be impeached. They have to be removed. Are you concerned at all with that kind of rhetoric?
Sure, you see it every day. I get emails every day from idiotic groups who are accusing Clarence Thomas of this or that, claiming right-wing control of the Supreme Court. Sheldon Whitehouse has been abusive this way, the senator from Rhode Island. So yeah, the Democrats control almost everything in the country, but the one thing they don't control is the Supreme Court, so they're gonna try to destroy it. And that's what's going on here. And that's why I think the justices are aware of that. And that's why I think it's very likely on this, you're going to get a 9-0 decision. They're going to unite and say that we're not going to allow specific justices to be singled out here. We're going to do this as an entire court. So I think this is going to be 9-0, that Trump stays on the ballot. But then you might have seven different concurring opinions, but I think they will be unanimous that what happened here can't stand and that they're not going to allow one or two justices to be singled out.
That's a good thing. Okay, let's move on to this January 6th immunity case. Trump got some bad news courtesy of the federal appeals court. What does this mean? He doesn't have immunity. Is that permanent now? Does it go to the Supreme Court from here? Where do you see all this going?
So the issue that was before the D.C. Court of Appeals was whether Trump has absolute immunity, meaning that he cannot be prosecuted for anything that he did while in office. And they held that he doesn't have absolute immunity. That doesn't mean he doesn't have immunity. They didn't reach the question of whether the conduct he engaged in was part of his presidential duties. If it is, he might have immunity for that, but not for other things. But this is all getting back to the government's desire to prosecute Trump, to try to keep him off the ballot, to try to imprison him. And I think this is going to go to the Supreme Court also. And I think the result in the Supreme Court may not be as clear cut as it will be with whether he stays on the ballot. I expect the Supreme Court to say he doesn't have absolute immunity for anything he does while in office. So, for example, if, to use his example, while president, he walked down Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, I don't think that would, they would say that would be covered, and that after he leaves office, he can still be prosecuted for that. But I think they will say that anything that fell within his presidential duties would be covered. And the question would be whether his politicking and his complaints about the election result would fall within that purview. And that's just not before the court right now.
Do we think we're going to get some kind of a resolution from these Trump trials, these Trump cases, before the election? Look, I'll just tell you, the reason I asked the question is Donald Trump going to be on the November ballot in prison somewhere?
The way the schedule seemed to be working out, the answer to that is no, that we probably won't get to trial before November. But if we do, the one where it's most likely to happen, and I've said for almost a year that this is the greatest danger to Trump, is the Miami records case, because it's not half as complicated. It's all conduct after he left office. You don't have these immunity issues. You don't have these ballot issues. I think that's the one where he's at risk. That's scheduled, I believe, for this May. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's probably the one of the federal cases that is most likely to go to trial. And then the question there for the judge is going to be, are we going to be holding a trial in October or September before a presidential election?
Okay, well, what about this Joe Biden classified documents from today? The special counsel, Robert Hur, pretty much admits he had them, but they're not going to pursue any charges. So, look, I hate to make a stupid, whiny, hypocritical point, but Biden can do it, but Trump can't. What's the difference in these cases?
Yeah, well, I think the difference in the cases, and I know a lot of times people don't like to hear this, is that Donald Trump is not being prosecuted for any documents he took and kept and returned when asked to return them. And so I guess the distinction would be, if we're going to be fair about it, is Joe Biden returned the documents when asked to return them or when the FBI found them. The government's alleging, they've got to prove it, that Trump engaged in nefarious conduct to hide the documents that were subject to subpoena. So that, I think, is probably the difference between the two. And I don't like the whiny hypocrisy and stuff, but Trump is not being charged for any documents he took and returned when the FBI got involved. He's only being prosecuted for the documents he took and didn't return, or the conduct they claim obstructed the investigation into him.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay. Let me ask, you can give it to me right between the eyes, Bill. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Did he really do wrong there? I've heard from people that he did, that he really doesn't look great here. I'm talking about Trump with what he did. Tell me. You're the legal expert. I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, subject to, they have to prove it, okay? We only know what they allege. They allege he moved boxes. They allege he coordinated avoiding his attorneys being able to search for records that they said they were searching for. So if he did all of those things and he was a participant and they can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, then I think he's got real exposure. I've been saying this since March of last year. This has always been my thing. The other cases are garbage cases. They're nonsense cases. They're contrived political cases. If what the FBI and the feds are saying is true about him concealing records that were under subpoena, he's got a problem and people need to face up to that.
Well, thank you for giving it to us straight as you always do. Professor, please come back soon. All right. Let's lighten the mood. That was a lot, right? That was great news and bad news and all kinds of stuff. We need to lighten the mood. We'll do that next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I think it's time, before we play the video, to do another one of Daddy Jesse's PSAs that I had to have to do from time to time. And I know I'm a jerk, I understand that, but you should understand that I am a jerk because I care about you. It's just my own way. I can't help being a jerk. I genuinely want you to be safe and happy and prosper, and so I need to tell you something. Nature is dangerous. All right, nature is dangerous. Animals live in the wild. They're wild. And I don't care how big and cute their eyes are or how fluffy they get. They will kill you. They will. One of those animals that kills people is a moose. Did you know that moose regularly kill wolves? Packs of wolves can take down almost anything, and don't get me wrong, they are successful when they take on a moose from time to time, but they routinely find dead wolves in the wild who have their skulls crushed. Moose are mean. They are big and strong and mean, and they will stomp you into a pancake. So I don't care how big and cute his nose is, don't get close to one. Now, these skiers, by the grace of God, were on skis. I don't know that they did anything stupid. Like I said, moose are sometimes just really mean and territorial. Either way, woo, I bet these guys were praying they didn't wipe out.
Moose! Susan!
If that was me, I'd be dead, because every time I ski, I wipe out. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.